Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB Digital Radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.
Well, investment banker and insurance chairman Nicholas Lyons has taken up his role as 694th Lord Mayor of London, the global ambassador for the Square Miles financial and professional services industry, and he joins us in studio now. Good morning. Thank you so much for being with us.
Good morning on this rather cold and wet morning.
Is it? Okay, pretty bleak outside, but look, lovely to have you with us in person. Rishi Sunak has just been speaking at the Confederation of British Industry annual gathering. This is the big conversation between government and business. Third Conservative PM in a year to do so. How much does he have the support of the City of London currently?
Well, I think you can judge that by the reception of the markets to the arrival of Rishi Sunak back in number 10 and Jeremy Hunt at number 11. If you look at long-dated gilt yields, we're back down to levels that we had before Liz Truss took over as Prime Minister. And I think that is a very strong endorsement of having people in both number 10 and number 11 that understand financial markets and have business backgrounds.
Okay. Rishi Sunak in his speech has been saying regulatory freedom is the important opportunity of Brexit. Does that opportunity extend to the City of London, do you think?
Definitely. Obviously, Brexit focused on trade of goods rather than services. There is a big area of uncertainty still around how the UK and the EU work together on a regulatory basis. But the advantage of Brexit is that we can certainly look at legislation such as Solvency II. So the announcement at the same time as the autumn statement of changes to Solvency II were very, very welcome, and will make a difference to the way that the long-term savings insurance players can actually participate in funding long-dated infrastructure loans, for instance.
Yeah, but that's a very small part of the market. That, you know, London is basically the loser in terms of Brexit, and the UK is the loser in terms of long-term economic growth. Is there a single benefit from Brexit that is tangible now, 6 years later?
You wouldn't have found many people in the City of London who were great fans of separating from the EU. If you're right at the centre of a very large trading entity and you have significant competitive advantage, shooting yourself in the foot is not the most sensible thing to do. But the fact of it is, we are where we are, and now we have to take advantage of the freedoms that we do have. We have not yet done so, and there are many other things I think that we will have to look at to try and make sure that we improve and increase the competitiveness of London as a global financial centre in that context. But it is important to make the point that within regulatory reform, we do not want to see a weakening of the reputation of our regulators. The PRA and the FCA are well respected globally, and that's a really important platform of London as a global financial centre. I would say, along with the primacy of the rule of law and our system of parliamentary democracy, those are sort of three extraordinarily important planks of the strength of London as a global financial centre.
Is there a risk with regulatory changes of diverging to an extent with EU rules that it becomes more difficult to have cross-border financial services that are run from London? I know obviously a lot of those services have had to move for passporting requirements, but is there a risk of further damage to that end of the industry?
There is always risk, but I'm an optimist. I actually think that there is there's been a sort of noticeable change of tone around the debate between the UK and the EU. I think we clearly need to see some movement on the Northern Ireland Protocol. If that issue can be progressed, then I think there will be a wave of enhanced cooperation between the UK and the EU. We are, of course, looking always to find opportunities to cooperate, and there are a number of areas where we do so, and there are other areas where, of course, EU competitors are trying to eat our lunch, which is only fair in a competitive world. But I think the broad issue is that it is going to be hugely beneficial both to the EU and the UK to find ways to cooperate more and more.
Okay. If there's one bit of advice that you would like to get across to Rishi Sunak and to Jeremy Hunt now, what would it be? I mean, Tony Danker talked about, yes, the autumn statement being good, but it only being the first half of a plan, that actually you can't have sort of spending cuts and taxes going up without there being a plan for growth for Britain. Okay, that's broadly for the UK. What would be your message to this government now for the City of London specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I think Tony's absolutely right. And it's a point that I've made on a number of occasions since the autumn statement, which is the Chancellor had an unenviable task trying to balance the books over a relatively short period of time. But you don't create growth by increasing taxes. You don't create growth by cutting spending. You have to invest. And I'm afraid successive governments have failed to do so. You know, as far as I'm concerned, there is a huge role that the private sector can play in this. It's the private sector that creates wealth and creates jobs. We need the government to get behind business and to get behind entrepreneurs and create an environment that encourages investment. We need to dismantle barriers to entry. We need to create the situation where people from overseas who can bring talent, wealth, entrepreneurship, as I say, create an environment where our own entrepreneurs thrive and want to build their businesses in the UK. For far too long, we have lost these great tech, fintech, life science, biotech businesses to overseas investors who have then caused these businesses to list abroad. We've got to create the environment that encourages them to stay here.
You've talked about creating a £100 billion investment fund to grow British business on that very point. But you want half the money to come from government. I mean, £50 billion, billions are hard for most of us to understand, but fairly easy this time because actually it's comparable to the fiscal hole that we've talked so much about for government. It's a huge sum of money. What are you talking about? What are you saying? What is your pitch to Rishi Sunak for why the government would hand over that kind of cash?
Well, to be fair, my main focus is on the bit that the private sector can provide,
sure,
because that's sort of within our scope. Clearly, government has to make their own decisions for themselves. But don't forget that we pay £50 billion a year in state pensions, unfunded state pensions. So we don't. When you look around the world at the best, most sophisticated investors in the world, you look at the Canadian state pension funds, you look at some of the big sovereign wealth funds, you look at the Australian superannuation scheme, they put money aside and have invested in not only their own economies and early stage businesses, but globally as well. And they've created huge wealth. We never took advantage of the discovery of North Sea oil to create a sovereign wealth fund. Now, we can't turn the clock back, but it is worth noting that that's exactly what the Norwegian government did. And that sovereign wealth fund is now worth £1 trillion. So if you think about the level of indebtedness that this country has, £2.46 trillion of gilts, almost, you know, it's 96% of GDP, to create... if you said, well, what's the off-balance sheet liability that you'd require to deliver £50 billion to pay those state pension payments? That's another £1 trillion. Mm. So we've borrowed our way as far as we can. We're in a situation where we've got a need to try and balance our books. But we've got still some assets like the investment in NatWest, for instance. Why wouldn't the government commit to say that we're going to put that into a sovereign wealth fund or a wealth fund of some kind?
But are there any noises, indications that this is a realistic possibility?
I think that it'll be very interesting to see. Don't forget, Labour has actually said that they would create a wealth fund. They would put £8 billion into a wealth fund. Now, that's a start. The German government is creating a sovereign wealth fund. They're going to put 10 billion euros a year. I think if you make that commitment, you get to 50 billion. You know, it doesn't take very long to get to 50 billion.
Okay. We're heading into what looks like could be a very long recession in this country. How badly will the city be affected by the economic downturn?
We have to get a balance here. There's no doubt that people are going to have to tighten their belts. We've already seen some investment banks making announcements about cutting numbers. But the city also has a role to play in helping people through this dilemma. And we've got to work out how we can play our part responsibly to help alleviate the burden here. So I think we will see, of course, a rise in non-performing loans. But we want to stop, ideally, we want to stop banks just sort of pulling the plug automatically on people who may be falling into negative equity. Mm. So I think we have to try and get insurance companies to provide premium waivers. We need to have some credit available to people that, to help them tide themselves through this. Don't forget, you know, we've got statistics that show that maybe 17 million people in this country have savings of less than £100. But 15 million of those are in jobs. So they're struggling to work out how they can budget for the next week. Mm. But having said that, they have got jobs. They will be able to repay loans.
Yes, except if 500,000 jobs go in the oncoming recession, which is the kind of expectation. Do you think that jobs in the City of London are going to shrink? The number of employed in the city, then?
I think, you know, the city is not going to be an exception to what's happening in the rest of the country. We have a lot of jobs in new areas of sort of fintech that are creating very interesting careers for lots of people. Mm-hmm. And our banks and our insurance companies are better capitalized than they've ever been. So they're as well positioned to withstand an economic downturn as they could. But at the end of the day, you know, taxes are rising, people are being squeezed, banks and insurance companies want to continue to be able to pay dividends to pensioners. So if they have to cut costs, they will. And so I would anticipate that there will be some job losses, but hopefully not too many.
Okay. Nicholas Lyons, Lord Mayor of London, thank you so much for coming in to speak to us.
Great pleasure.
Bloomberg Daybreak Europe, weekday mornings at 6 a.m. on London DAB digital radio and on demand via the Bloomberg Business app and BloombergRadio.com.